Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The 7th day of April, 2014. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That is where you'll find access to the chat room. And come on in. Folks are wandering by even as I speak. We'll have ourselves a rousing multimedia entertainment extravaganza experience this evening. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, the spiffy new media player. Thank you, John Fox. And a selection of news stories of the day for your consideration, some of which may very well find themselves in conversation this evening. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you will, of course, find the PayPal button. That's how all of this continues day in and day out for, lo, yea, verily, these many, many years. No ads for bowling balls that will bounce on Swedish mattresses and be picked up by the miraculous vacuum cleaners while you listen to the dulcet tones of your Bose Wave radio here. Sorry, no. No buy gold now ads. Nothing. Nothing except your determination that we persist in independent conversation radio. And it's a whale of a determination, too, I might add. And I can never adequately express the amount of gratitude that goes to everyone who makes The Horn available for everyone. Because there's no chat, no charge for a podcast, there's no charge for access to this stream or the 24/7 stream whenever it's working. No, we're not selling anything here. This is not anything you could think of as a business. This is just a matter of trying to keep this thing going and everything rolling so that, well, the conversation can continue. And in that vein, some program notes, or a program note. You may recall back in, I believe it was October, I was supposed to go to a funeral. Didn't wind up going. And now, my uncle, who passed away back then, is being buried with honors, full military honors, at Arlington National Cemetery. And that happens next week. So we will be gone next week. The whole family will be gone. Off to Washington, D.C. We will attend the funeral, and then since we're there, we will put in some of the Kincaid family ache act work. We will spend the remainder of the week working on the ache act and getting more support for it in the Senate and getting more support for it in the House of Representatives. And I will make every effort to have a program almost every night that week. But we also know that that is often easier said than done, simply because of some equipment glitches that attend the entire process. So with that in mind, I am going to suggest, and you don't have to if you don't want to, but past experience has shown that when I'm on the road, things tend to go to perdition in a hurry. I'm going to suggest that we try to take care of 2 weeks fundraising in 1 week, or actually 4 days, because jaunt begins on Friday. And so I'll be gone Friday, let's see, this is the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, Friday the 11th through, well, we'll be home on Sunday the 13th, and then back to regular broadcast schedule. So here's the deal. We're going to try to raise, we try to raise $750 in a week. And we're going to try to raise 2 weeks' worth in 4 days, or get as close to it as we possibly can, so that I can go on a frenzy of bill paying before we leave out of here and not be sweating the small stuff while we're gone. Meanwhile, as noted, I will try to get a program out every evening, but that will be, but when I do that, that will be limited to Skype calls only as far as conversation is concerned. Shucks, we might even try to do several nights of Friday on the Front Porch, just because that makes, well, that works, and it's a lot of fun. So I want to put that out there. So that means we'll try to raise $300 this evening, and that would take care of tonight and Friday, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we'll try to take a bite out of next week, too. So that's where we are, 30 folks at 10 bucks a piece, as we begin the broadcast week here. Now, it's 6 minutes past the hour, and don't think for an instant that I'm not well aware that this is, in fact, Moran Monday. Oh, it is, it is, it is. And I've got a note here from our buddy Scott, who heard himself being conjured recently. It was back when we were talking about the brutality of an America that would piss and moan about a second baseman who missed a game to be with his wife while she gave birth to their first child. So Scott writes, "Hey, Bobba Rebob. Sorry about the slow-mo conjo. It just so happens that I can, for the first time ever, see every game of March Madness, including the various league tournaments, so I am indulging myself by watching one game a night. Okay, sometimes two, but only rarely three, knowing that I could stretch this out all summer long. I'm not going to stumble on game outcomes in the Stockholm newspapers, Pravdasan or Izvestiakvist. The local news holds little spoiler risk. In fact, the only one I fear giving a game away is Bob Kincaid talking with his sports soulmate Sandra. No, don't take that as any sort of criticism. I don't begrudge the two of you any shared happy time. Bless you both, you're deserving of it. But you know what, I'm proud of myself. I've done pretty well. I haven't mentioned it. I think maybe I mentioned it on the first round or so, but after that, no. And I got to figure maybe Scott's passed the round of 64 by now. But Scott continues, what it means as well is that I've had less time to listen to the podcast and have been doing so with my finger on the stop button, lest I hear, hey, what about that X versus Y game? I'm still in the second day of the round of 64. Oh, dear. But we've gotten past the whole Ohio State-Dayton thing then, I trust. But nonetheless, I really do have to have my fix of the horn, so thus, it's only just now that I heard myself being conjured after the fact concerning Stalinism in Sweden. Oh, okay, so there's a conjunction there. No, this was the Pat Robertson thing. Right. Now, Bob, switch to best Russian accent. In order to get best effective explanation of Stalinism in Sweden, Bob must play below Fugue in C minor, Song of the Volga Boatman, played on Horn's most favorite musical instrument, the Russian Calliope, invented in Russia. Best to start at 40 seconds and let run to 3:26 only. Nobody want to hear silly chit-chat before and after 40 seconds and 3:26. Best our buddy Scott can find on series of tubes. Not many people on planet want to hear Fugue in C minor for four hands and Calliope. Music lovers find it's not what you call highbrow, but for Stalinism in Sweden, is just exactly right. And so, with that, going before, yes, let us begin. Courtesy of our buddy Scott. Sweden is very cold, dark, dreary country in winter. proletariat must work long hours huddled around entrance to Volvo and IKEA entranceways at early hours to get goods from shelf before disappear. Like every country, reactionary counter-revolutionary elements exist. In Sweden, too, there are what you in the decadent West would call, what is expression, flying monkey. Even here in Sweden, with universal health care, free university education, 1 year paid parental leave, 6 weeks paid vacation, and other good stuff, we have not so happy residual bourgeois malingerers, great-grandsons and great-granddaughters. Okay, not so great, not really. From age of timber barons and landlords. These people do not appreciate workers' paradise, would much rather have American paradise. Few rich, many poor, but lots and lots of freedom for themselves. For the rest, how you say it? Lick up, bootstrap. So, these counter-revolutionary capitalist pigs often have own websites and even newspapers. In these newspapers and websites, they like to talk about how the Swedish People's Republic is a Stalinist country. They have been calling it Stalinist country for decades. In fact, it has been called Stalinist country so long, maybe that's where Yosif Vissarionovich get idea of named Stalin. Who knows? But we who live here have long get used to this, like you guys do with Lyndon LaRouche. They talk a lot, nobody listens. And if somebody does listen, it means it's probably flying American monkey. As we say here in Swedish People's Republic, if our comrades in USSR only had our style of Stalinism instead of Stalinism style of Stalinism. Maybe USSR still exists, and Lada, not the Volvo station wagon, would have been 1980s car of decade. And instead of meatballs at Great People's Furniture Imperium with Russian-designed furniture in flat boxes with silly two-small six-sided wrench invented in Russia, you would be eating borscht and pissing pink. So, Bob and Hornies, what more to tell you? Stalinism version 4.5 is big hit around here. Even if we give it other name and drop out the Stalin part, so as not to scare people. So listen to rest of pretty Calliope music and dream of white nights soon to come. Pike and perch roasting on spit over campfire next to pretty glacial lake. Signed, Arbudsky Skatovich. Pretty, pretty, pretty Calliope music. And there is end of pretty Calliope music. So now we understand. Now we understand where it is that Marion Robertson, former liquor supply officer, got that whole Swedish Stalinism thing going. Oh yeah, everybody's a critic. Asa says, Russian accent ain't working for me, brother Bob. Am I alone? LOL. You people. But nonetheless, even though the Russian accent wasn't working for brother Asa, he did get us started on this evening's fundraising. And that means we have only $275 to go to make this whole thing work. Thank you, Jim. Jim saying condolences to your uncle. I thank him for his service. May he rest among his comrades. He was an amazing man from an amazing family. And I'm looking forward, among other things, to getting to see a whole lot of family that I haven't seen in a very, very, very long time. Back in the dim and halcyon days of childhood, I would see them maybe once or twice a year. They would try to coordinate with my family when we would come up and they would come over, and yeah, cousins. Because, you know, the part of that whole blowing apart of the extended family process was to scatter families to the four winds all over this continent. No worries, Randy. No worries. So, all kidding aside, were we kidding? No. This is Moran Monday on the horn, and Lord God knows we've got plenty to work with here. I've even got a little something from somebody who has professed to wander into the hills and hollers of Appalachia and suddenly thinks he understands same and is out there to explain to the right-wing world exactly what's wrong. Oh, dear. I shared this out on Twitter earlier today. In fact, I shot the story over to our buddy, the Angry Indian, because I had a feeling that there were elements of this story that would just make him run screaming. All right, yeah, okay. Everybody pile on. Jim, Russian accent. Maybe good for Boris Badenov on Bullwinkle. Nietzsche. What do you want? It's him or Chekhov. That's my two Russian accent models. Boris Badenov and Chekhov. Captain, it was terrible. They put things in our ears. But I don't spend a lot of time with it, so it's not nearly as good as my hillbilly. No, seriously, we've got some Appalachian Moranity. We've got, family values Moran. We got one of those. And since every evening, just about, of this years-long program has included a mandatory, obligatory reference to Star Trek, we've even got a Star Trek Moran this evening. Really. We got more fun than we know what to do with. And frankly, it's kind of difficult to tell where to start. I mean, you're starting with one foot in a bucket when you've got the option of going to Pat Buchanan, declaring over at Wingnut Daily that there is a, what's he calling it? Same-sex marriage pandemic. Now, at this point in time, it's abundantly clear that Pat Buchanan is just a cranky old Nazi. And I'm not throwing that around like in the guy. He just is. I mean, the guy's a fascist. He looks back fondly on the good old days of the Enabling Act. But there he is, yes. God has favored Vladimir Putin because he's cracking down on Tegay. And because he is fighting, and these are Buchanan's words, quote, the same-sex marriage pandemic. In the culture war for the future of mankind, really? Putin is planting Russia's flag firmly on the side of traditional Christianity. Ay, 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 ay. In the new war of beliefs, Putin is saying, it is Russia that is on God's side, and the West is Gomorrah. The war to be waged with the West is not with rockets. It is a cultural, social, moral war where Russia's role, in Putin's words, is to prevent movement backward and downward into chaotic darkness and a return to primitive state. Oh, for pity's sake. Oh, Mother McCree. So, like I said, when you've got that as appetizer. What in God's name can you expect for a main course? Well, let's Let's check out Jeff Allen. Yeah. This past Friday, he showed up on some wingnut religion industry radio show to declare that the Southern Baptist Convention has gone soft on the homos. You know, ordinarily you do a little more setup with something like this, but no, we're going to just let this roll. Oh, tennis ball, duct tape, okay? I don't want to forget to get the warning out there.
It's not an exaggeration to say homo-fascist because the German Nazi Party was homosexual. Hitler was a homosexual. The top Nazi leadership, all of them were homosexuals. It was a radical homosexual movement.
That's why they were running around with belt plates that read, Gott mit uns, you know, God with us.
That gained political power, military power, and they were creating a homosexual special race. That's what it was all about. It wasn't this thing about an Aryan race of white people, blue-eyed, blonde-haired white people. Hitler was trying to create a race of super gay male soldiers. That's what he was creating.
Really? Really? Then why were the gay folk, homosexuals, in the early days of the Reich among the first ones who were rounded off and sent off to camp? Maybe I'm wrong, but I think even before certain peoples were asked to applique yellow stars on their clothing, other people were asked to applique pink triangles? Have I got my historical sequencing right? If I don't, if it was contemporaneous, okay, but... A race of super gay male soldiers. And I'm having some adjective troubles there. Does super modify gay? Super gay! Or does super modify male? Or does it modify soldiers? I'm struggling here. Now let's go back a hair.
Blonde-haired white people. Hitler was trying to create a race of super gay male soldiers. That's what he was creating. And when you understand
right.
What the real agenda of
in the Wehrmacht, never mind.
Of the homosexual movement was in the 40s, 30s and 40s, and you see it's happening now here in the United States of America. And I'm telling you, this is not an exaggeration. If it's not stopped, it will end up in America just like it was in Germany. But it won't be the Jews that will be slaughtered, it will be the Christians.
Right. I mean, that, you know, we haven't gotten, fortunately, to the slaughtering part, but we're getting to the point of the marginalizing part. Marginalize, get us to the edge, remove us from any influence in society.
Yeah, okay, sure. You're marginalized. That's why there's a church on every corner. That's why that's why Hobby Lobby's about to be declared a religious corporate person, because, you know, y'all's marginalized. On the other hand, however, and you can expect this coming to a right-wing religion industry outrage merchant near you any day now, there was a little bit of news out of the Supreme Court today. The Supreme Court, the Roberts Court, declined to hear. In other words, sent it back, the case is over. Declined to hear the case of a bakery owner who in 2006 turned away a pair of women who wanted a cake baked because they stood up for traditional marriage, you know, as I've recently reminded and taken to reminding, the traditional marriage such as occurs in Genesis when Lot's wife has been turned into a pillar of salt, and Lot's daughters decide to get Lot liquored up and then have sex with their daddy, and God does nothing to them. That kind of traditional stuff. You know that whole "thou shalt not commit adultery" was there a timeout because the city was getting bombed by the Everloved? Who knows? This goober, this Wiles, went on to refer to gay rights as the new Nazism. Rick Wiles. And America's just not going to be a fit place to live. But why let me say it? Let's let him.
They are Nazi thought police. And they're going to be the worst kind of tyrants we've ever seen. And the nightmare is only starting. And if the Christians don't get their act together, this is going to become a hellacious place to live. And you're going to have to go underground to be a Christian in this country. They're going to hunt you down, and they're going to persecute you. And that is the spirit that's alive in this country right now and is being embraced by political leaders in both parties. It is the new Nazism. My guess is that
they already are hunting you down. They're already hunting.
Yes,
you.
They're looking for people. They want trophies.
They come after you.
They want trophies. They want your head on the wall. They want to put your head on the wall. They're looking for scalps.
Oh my God! How many weird culturally biased, white privileged up things can they work in, wrongnesses can they work into one? Oh, Jesus. They want to put your head on the wall. I got friends out there that hunt and stuff, and there are certain segments of this population who use taxidermied heads of wild animals as decorative motifs in their home, and, well, they can be kind of beautiful. I remember seeing a chandelier once made out of nothing but deer antlers, and it was interesting. But really, Pat Robertson's head stuffed, staring down at you reproachfully in your gayed-up homosexual media center den next to the fireplace? Maybe immediately opposite a leering Fred Phelps head? You know, we don't even need to give these people sodium pentothal, these morons. They're just out there wandering around with their little ids on their sleeves, and they're going to hunt me down, and they want to cut my head off and put it on the wall, and I feel persecuted because it's the new Nazism, letting American citizens have all the rights that they're guaranteed under the Constitution of the United States. It's Nazism, I tell you, Nazism! See, I knew we would get under. I knew this would get things off to a rolling start. Steve, with several questions. Hitler was a homosexual. Was Eva Braun a man then? Sorry, Jim, it's too late. I'm not sticking with the Russian accent anymore. You had your chance. Yeah, Hitler was a homosexual, and Steve also notes, Hitler, gay folk, super race. I thought gay folk were unmanly and waifish. And Steve does apologize. He says, I'm sorry to be so much on the email machine because Christians are such a small, insular group as Jews were in Germany. I'm thinking we're going to be... No, Steve, I get it. We're going to need a bigger FEMA camp. Oh, okay. Things are clearing up a little bit now. We have another communique in from Steve pointing out super gay, the gay spectrum. Super gay. Harvey Fierstein, RuPaul, Ellen DeGeneres, just gay, most LGBT people. Not so gay, Dave Coppay, Paul Horning. Yes, Paul Horning, friend of mine, had an affair with him. Michael Sam. Have we just had an outing here? Oh, my God. not so gay, just a little gay. And see, we've got the evening off to a rolling to a good rolling boil for Jim. Super gay? One word? Nuts! Who? What? Why? When? Where? Oh my God, Jim! Well, Rick Wiles is the Who, and Jeff Allen, they're the Who, and it's something called True News, T-R-U, of course, not T-R-U-E. And Rick Wiles was discussing the coming new Nazism, which will be really gay. I mean, if you like the old Nazi uniforms, wait till you see the new ones, the new gay ones. Oh, wow. And Jeff Allen is, and this was all because Jeff Allen had gotten all bent out of shape because he thinks the Southern Baptist Convention, which is America's largest single denomination and believes that the Bible is the inerrant word of God and et cetera, and literal truth, and the earth revolves around, or sun revolves around the earth, and we got more on that in a minute. This goober wrote, at a conference of journalists, Russell Moore, the president of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention, was asked to describe his ideal presidential candidate with regard to the same-sex marriage issue. Marriage gets scare quotes around it, of course. I would want a presidential candidate who understands the public good of marriage, Moore responded, and one who's not hostile to evangelical concerns and who's going to protect religious liberty and freedom of conscience. Moore's answer did not, however, include a firm requirement that a Republican presidential candidate be a vocal supporter of natural marriage. Natural. You know, like when Solomon took a few hundred wives, or David did, or, you know, traditional family values, Bible-based marriage, like Lot and his daughters. Later in his speech, Moore stated that he believes evangelicals are beginning to realize that the American culture is moving towards same-sex marriage. Oh, for pity's sakes. Protecting religious liberty is certainly very important, but to do so while at the same time ceding the rest of the country to the homosexual activist is not a position that, he said position, that evangelicals should adopt. We are called to a transformational role. Trans role? Really? For the entire world. The whole world? And that includes all of America. Merely protecting our turf is not the Christian thing to do. Moore represents an influential voice, but let's just hope he doesn't speak for most concerned Christians. Oh, dear. Yeah. Super gay. Super gay. No, I was reading from a translation from Pat Buchanan's original German, Ron and Raleigh. from Fritz in Arkansas, Godwin's Law, Super Gay Nazis, that's super.gay.nazis, more and Monday. Bob, how the F does this guy explain away the multitudes of gays and lesbians and likely also trans people being sent away to the concentration camps? My head hurts. There are morons, and then there are some really delusional, dangerous morons. Well, again, I just recommend learning the two Nahuatl words. Nahuatl, I don't think we pronounce the L. I've learned that recently. It's kind of glottal. Xolopitli, dangerously nut, or harmlessly nuts. And Tlawele, criminally, dangerously, murderously insane. That's who we're, the Tlaweles, that's who we're talking about here, Fritz. Apparently, I had no idea this was going to start such a flurry from our buddy Harry in Baltimore. Pat Buchanan, did I hear this right? Does he not know his Holocaust history? Gays were also hunted during the Holocaust. What kind of even nuttier nutcase has Pat Buchanan become? Well, this is what happens when those little spiral-shaped worms from tertiary syphilis begin burrowing around and you didn't have much of a brain to work with in the first place. Jack in Shreveport. What? Wait, huh? Now, who are these guys again? Rick Wiles and Jeff Allen. That's who we're talking about here. Let's see. Jeff Allen has a history of comparing gay people to Al-Qaeda, Nazis, and the Ku Klux Klan. And now the comparison is just simply over, and they've declared that gay is the new Nazi. Oh, yeah. I know. I know. And I realize that sometimes, and we will get away from some of this in a minute. Good question coming in from our buddy Robert in Australia. Super gay. Did this guy see the producers either version and think it was a documentary? You'd be surprised, Robert, the things that they think are documentaries. They think Catch-22 is a documentary. They think, Dr. Strangelove is a documentary. Thanks going out to Robert. Thank you very much. We are now at $45 for fundraising for the evening, and that means $255 to go if we're going to do a doubled up day every day this week. Thank you very, very much, Robert. Like I said, though, I know it can seem like this is just an extension of Prayer Meeting Wednesday, but it's really not. I mean, we get some goofy crap on Prayer Meeting Wednesday. But this sort of has to be transferred to Maury on Monday, just because the level and volume and breadth and depth and scope of the stupid involved, and hence, instead of saving him for Wednesday, I give you now, but mercifully without audio, Chappie Gordon Klingenschmidt. You know, those little seat covers in the restrooms are to protect you from the Klingenschmidt. He's gone off, and by the way, in relation to this, Dr. Bill had to be absent today, so I thought it would be beneficial to run his program from last week, where he went over some of the Citizens United stuff again, and he will take up McCutcheon and Citizens United beginning tomorrow and following on Wednesday. So you want to be here for that. If you can't be listening live, then you want to be getting the podcast. Just wanted you to know. So from creating a race of super gays in America to the question of how one would accomplish that. Oh, like I said, we have Chappie Gordon Klingenschmidt, disgraced Navy chaplain who wanted to make everybody in the Navy pray in Jesus' name. And he's still awfully worried about the Affordable Care Act. How dare President Obama order Christians to kill children? Huh?
What, Edith? Huh?
No, he wrote that, but maybe he typed it with his toes or his toenail clippings. Who knows? How dare President Obama order Christians to kill children? How dare any justice consider ordering Christians to kill children? It's bad enough they kill children on their own without our help. But now they demand we pay for it, too? Well, no. Nobody's demanding that anybody... No, not at all. This is about contraception, which is not the same thing as killing children. If it is, Chappie, Gordon, if that really is your name, then you're a mass murderer and have been ever since the first time you got done and felt really guilty and reached for the Kleenex. Millions! Millions! You know, just as quick as we find a procedure where we can run a scope up of a guy and all the way down to his testicles and let him look at all the little wiggling proto people. No, those aren't proto people. Those are real human beings. Well, then we'll begin to make some headway toward a culture of life. Democrats initiated a phony compromise with President Obama, who signed a toothless executive order which conflicts with the law and is unenforceable in court. I thought this guy had a degree in, like, preaching or theology or something. Who knew he was a lawyer? To give them top cover. Really? Top cover? To claim they're not funding abortion when the law they all passed specifically says they are. It says so on page 117. Abortions for which public funding is allowed. The services described in this clause are abortions for which the expenditure of federal funds appropriated for the Department of Health and Human Services is permitted based on the law as in effect of the date that is 6 months before the beginning of the plan year involved. It's settled Supreme Court law that you... Never mind. In other words... No, not in other words. At this point in time, Chappie's just hallucinating. Democrats lied when they claimed to prevent public taxpayer funding of abortion and mandated private funding of abortion as if that should be allowed either. Well, what about the blessed, sacred, holy free market, chaps? Come on, a little consistency here, buddy. They lied, plain and simple, because the law quoted above now reads, abortions for which public funding is allowed. Subsidizing child killing of innocents with your tax dollars so welfare moms can kill their child for a $12 copay while Planned Parenthood gets rich, charging you thousands of tax dollars against your will. No wonder both Stupak and Nelson were labeled traitors by every credible pro-life group in America. Friends? Really? Be careful of... Well, never mind. Friends, our nation stands in the midst of a spiritual war to save or destroy unborn babies and the elderly. How old do you have to be an elderly fetus? You and I stand in this battle together. We must stand strong. Yeah. Welfare moms will kill their child for a $12 copay. There is almost no end whatsoever to the wild fantasizing that the right wing engages in. And it takes in everything from Louis Gohmert's shopping carts full of crab legs now to welfare moms killing their unborn for a $12 copay. And heaven's going, really? Now, Chappie is right pale. So we understand that just as when Paul Ryan was blathering on about those inner city males who were too shiftless and uppity to go and get work, we know what he means by welfare moms. Man, you know what? Maybe maybe there'd be less abortion in this country if the, and I use this term deliberately, if the right wing would man up and maybe, prenatal care? How about some postnatal care? How about some meaningful, how about just not cutting the food stamp program? By the way, here in almost level West by God, Virginia, sometime this morning, a four-year-old who had been shot, freedom! Wolverines! A four-year-old who had been shot was anonymously dropped off at the hospital. Because, see, that's what we got to have. If we're going to ever be able to stop Obama's army of super gay male soldiers from destroying the country that America was once. No, really. The parents of a four-year-old girl dropped off at Thomas Memorial Hospital in South Charleston this morning with a gunshot wound have been arrested. Tabitha Bowen, age 24, and John Seymour, age 23, both of Cross Lanes, were arrested Monday afternoon and charged with felony child neglect resulting in serious injury. Casey Seymour, age 4, of Cross Lanes, was dropped off at Thomas Hospital with a single gunshot wound to the arm. Captain Sean Crozier of the Kanawha Sheriff's Office said, detectives believe the 5-year-old brother may have accidentally shot his 4-year-old sister in the arm. Mom and dad were possibly asleep at the time. The girl was accompanied to the hospital by Bowen, but the girl's father, identified as Seymour, fled the area in a red Ford pickup truck with the little girl's 5-year-old brother. Crozier said the wound was not life-threatening and that the girl remained at the hospital in good condition. Crozier said the hospital staff called 911 when the child arrived and reported the incident in the red truck to authorities. Investigators are looking for a small caliber handgun, possibly a .22 caliber, in the bedroom of the residence. Crozier said deputies located Seymour and the 5-year-old boy at a home in a mobile home park on Dale Wood Drive in Cross Lanes. Detectives were searching the home Monday afternoon for evidence related to the shooting. Wow. Because, well, you're just going to have this if you want to live in a free country. Another note from Harry in Baltimore. Thank you, Bob. Chappie Gordon Klingenschmidt is my favorite Monday moron. I break into hysterical laughter every time you announce a new missive from him. Truly, he is my favorite wingnut political candidate. That's easy, isn't it? By the way, though, you might find this interesting. Another favorite moron of ours. Larry Pratt, who is such a wild-eyed Wolverine, and I don't mean the Michigan kind. Larry Pratt, who is such a wild-eyed Wolverine that he considers Wayne LaPierre over at the National Republican Rifle Association to be some sort of creepy communist liberal, Larry Pratt has a message for all of those out there who would try to protect children against gunshot wounds. Let's check in.
When you hear these stories on the news about the teachers and they're saying they're heroes because they're running and hiding and locking doors, that's supposed to be a heroic act. I think it's sheer terror. And
rather they be a hero with a good shot.
I would rather they be a hero with a good shot, because they're supposed to stand and blaze. Like I said, Larry Pratt is a real... Well, he's one of the folks you want to chase down with a giant butterfly net.
For those that are not thinking as totalitarians, gun control otherwise is not rational. Now, if you want to be dictator, gun control is very rational. Like Hitler said, we'd have to be crazy to let the conquered people have guns. And crazy was one thing.
You know, we may just have to rename Moran Monday to Hitler Monday. Because everything's Hitler. Just as a for instance, the other day on my Facebook page, we were discussing the new display show of Dim Leader's paintings. He's got one up of Putin and one up of, Tony Blair. And there's a painting of Angela Merkel, and there's a painting of some cats, and no sooner did I put it up than our buddy Michael asked, and you can find this down, it's just Bob Kincaid, Facebook. Michael asks, you know who else was a crappy painter? I said, wait for it. Michael said, okay then, Hitler! These people draw Hitler like a gun. Oh, wait. Larry Pratt, Gun Owners of America. So, apparently, because I would like to have a country in which five-year-old big brothers don't shoot four-year-old baby sisters because the 23-year-old redneck boy thinks that he's protecting freedom by keeping an accessible .22 caliber handgun lying about, I'm a dictator. No, Larry, I think you're just a dick. Hard to escape that conclusion.
You dick!
Yeah. Let's back up, though. Let's get the full gist of this.
Like Hitler said, we'd have to be crazy to let the conquered people have guns. And crazy was one thing I don't think he was. So he understood that. But we apparently can't think even as clearly as that monster did.
So he likes the way Hitler thought. Wolverines. So bear in mind that there's nothing heroic in a teacher using his or her body to shield his or her young charges from the gunfire of a Second Amendment freedom protector, lawful gun owner who's become an awful gun owner in the space of time it takes to squeeze a trigger. No, that's not heroic. It's only heroic if they're shooting back. Now, I got an email earlier today from Tosh. Our good friend Tosh of many, many years, who was responding to the story of the shooting at Fort Hood with some relevant data. Tosh says, I was among the active duty military, USN as a midshipman effective rank W03, in the Carter administration, and no one carried back then. Maybe after 30 years in Vietnam, the U.S. military was tuckered out. It would have violated the concept of wearing a uniform if some number of people were carrying weapons on their belts. If we'd had intruders, selected crew members, usually the psychos, went to the Master of Arms office, drew a weapon, rampaged through the ship. Luckily, I slept through that drill. Tosh continues, I don't think there is any place in Army fatigues where a concealed firearm can be carried that wouldn't take so long to get to that anyone trying to draw these wonderful weapons wouldn't either shoot themselves or get shot by the assailant. Carrying a firearm on one's hip doesn't make it concealed. I'm sorry, but there's no way to draw a weapon faster than it takes someone intent on doing harm to you to fire the weapon they already have in a ready position. Remember the Navy in the Navy shooting yard shooting, Navy Yard shooting? Some of the shooter's first victims were the police who, though armed, were taken by surprise. As I mentioned to a sheriff's captain, and he agreed, armed guards generally fail to be the people we trust with guns, aren't crazy enough to get the drop on rampaging crazy shooters. Even if they don't hesitate to be sure they are, usually aren't running around with weapons drawn. The guards at Buckingham Palace are a notable exception. They stand about 10 yards back from the entrance with an HK auto machine gun, I assume, in the down-ready position, ready to bring it up and unload a clip at a moment's notice. Also note that the vast majority of soldiers in any unit do not use or possess a handgun, even in a combat zone. Handguns are typically reserved for the non-combatants' military personnel, like officers and contractors. Arguably, under the older precedents, it could have been possible to outlaw handguns, since their true military utility is relatively small. Shotguns, particularly the sawed-off variety, are or were banned by the Geneva Convention. I'm not sure how we justified using them in Iraq, but I'm sure Alberto had a plan. And within that message, a substantive point to be made. Even if everybody's running around with one strapped to their hip, they're never going to have the drop on the person who comes in blazing. You just can't. But that's okay, because Larry Pratt says that how are teachers going to do this? I'm kind of at a loss. I mean, is Teach going to have the pistol in one hand and the chalk in the other when she's sitting there on the blackboard working out the quadratic equation, or perhaps analyzing a Shakespearean sonnet? And in that case, isn't she going to be shooting off-handed because she writes right-handed, and if she writes right-handed, she probably shoots that way? Because it's not going to work if the firearm's in her desk, because it's probably already been purloined by a student. I'm just kind of at a loss here. Or maybe we're going to have to double the educational budgets so that everywhere Teach goes, there can be somebody with the pistol up, two-handed, in the ready position, and let's say when she goes to pass out papers, the bodyguard runs in front and says, "Clear! Row 1. Clear! Row 2. Clear! Row 3. If you stop and take these things to their logical conclusions, you find that these right-wing gun freedom protector woods want to live in a really weird America. Oops. Apparently, I just got under Texas Betsy professional educator's skin a little bit. No way can this work. Pardon the caps. Is it because of the handedness barrier, Betsy? I don't know. But anyway, you slice it. Unless the teacher has a handgun pulled and is blazing away at the bad guy, and possibly at any children behind the bad guy, because they don't just, get in a corner and stand in place. According to Larry Pratt, she's not a hero. You heard him. She's just a victim. I'd rather they be a hero with a good shot. Yeah, okay. I'm guessing this is not a unique statement. Texas Betsy points out, "I lose my pen on a regular basis. If something isn't attached to my keys and badge, I set it down while I focus on kids and instruction." Oh, then we'd have to put the pistol on a lanyard around your neck, and they got some heft to them and some weight, and I don't think that'd be good for you, Betsy. Daggum sissy teachers who don't want to run around carrying guns in their Well, okay, you're all just going to have whatever handed. Okay, it's more important that you have your gun and your hand in his hand, and you're just going to have to learn to write with the other hand. That's it. And if it takes two hands, well, it's just not going to happen in school. I'm sorry. Biology teachers in 10th grade demonstrating dissection are going to have to do it with one, just, you know, one-handed scalpel work, use the scalpel, you know, flip back the flaps, and poor frog. But at least the frog won't be. Oh, dear. Never mind. And so we understand now that the Freedom Protector Woods are not the ones who are, I mean, abusing children. No. We return now to Chappie Gordon Klingenschmidt for a real explanation of child abuse.
Now let's take a moment and discern the spirits. You know, child abuse is always wrong, whether...
You know, I think he'd do a lot better discerning the spirits if he had a nice gin or maybe a decent bourbon. I mean, those are spirits worth discerning. I don't know what he's discerning here, but no, child abuse.
Now let's take a moment and discern the spirits. You know, child abuse is always wrong, whether it's done by straight couples, gay couples. Child abuse is always wrong. And in fact, one of the reasons that we advocate for traditional marriage between one man and one woman is because it protects the children in a better way. Now, I'm not saying, and let me be clear about this, that gay couples always abuse children. Of course not. But there is a standard by which, at least in a straight couple's home, the child has a mother and a father. And that's the distinction we like to make. The marriage argument is not so much about whether or not the couple should have rights, but it's about what are the rights of the children. Doesn't every child have a right to a mother and a father? And even if the child is not physically abused, what's the next worst thing that you can do to a child? Is to take away their mother. And that's why we oppose, and by the way, I was adopted when I was 3 years old, so this is personal to me.
Yeah, they screwed up, Gordon.
I was given a loving mother and a loving father, and they raised me in a Christian home. Thank God for that. But in the case of homosexual couples who get married, so to speak, and then they adopt children, even if they never physically harm those children, they are taking away that child's right to a mother. Or maybe they're taking away that child's right to a father.
Yeah, but it's only the mother that counts. You already said that, Gordon.
And that, in my opinion, is also abusive. So we oppose, in fact, homosexual adoption, here's a slide, always takes away one gendered parent from a child. Now think about that.
We will, Gordon. Please, trust me, we will. Yeah, Texas Betsy's right. What they're taking away is that child's right to a series of foster homes or group homes. Which we know is such a warm and nurturing experience. Oh, mercy. And we are not even part of the way into it. I'm inclined. Well, no, let's just keep going. So we've heard a lot about families And we know now that welfare moms will just get all pregnant, and then because it's so much fun to go have an abortion, but you know how are you going to walk away from a $12 copay? I mean, bargain. That the welfare moms will get all pregnant, and then they'll go have their $12 copay abortion. And then come home and start working on getting pregnant again, because you hate to waste something as cheap as a $12 copay. I don't very often wander by National Review online. I mean, you want to talk about a swamp? This is a swamp whose liquids are entirely fracking fluids and coal sludge. But our buddy Benny posted a story to my Facebook page today. You know, Lottie, I don't know. Those $12 abortions, do they come in a six pack? Who can answer? But probably, you know, that Kenyan Muslim socialist with the deep seated hatred of white fetuses, they probably do. You can probably get them by the case. Anyway. Benny posted this on my Facebook page. Oh, my God. It is yet another attempt by yet another outlander to come into Appalachia and figure out what is wrong with those people. And he spends his time in Owsley County, Kentucky. And he declares as a thesis, you know, you got to have a thesis. He declares, well, let's just read it. There are lots of diversions in the big white ghetto, the vast moribund matrix of wonder-bread-hued Appalachian towns and villages stretching from northern Mississippi to southern New York, a slowly dissipating nebula of poverty and misery with its heart in eastern Kentucky. The last redoubt of the Scots-Irish working class that picked up where African slave labor left off, mining and cropping and sawing the raw materials for a modern American economy that would soon run out of profitable uses for the class of people who 500 years ago would have been known without any derogation as peasants. No, Kevin Williamson, you dumbass, we were known as borderers. And for a hell of a lot more than 500 years, people who knew what to do with the shrimp fork were building walls to keep us out of the nice part of town. Hello, Adrian. He continues, thinking about the future here and its bleak prospects is not much fun at all, so instead of too much black-minded introspection... Really? Black-minded introspection coming from a writer at the National Review online that... Oh, well, but you know the history of the National Review. So instead of the too much black-minded introspection, you have the pills and the dope, the morning beers, the endless scratch-off lotto cards, healing meetings up on the hill, the federally funded ritual of trading cases of food stamp Pepsi for packs of Kentucky's best cigarettes and good old hard currency, tall piles of gas station nachos, the occasional blast of meth, Narcotics Anonymous meetings, petty crime, the draw, the recreational making and surgical unmaking of teenaged mothers, and death. Life expectancies are short. The typical man here dies well over a decade earlier than does a man in Fairfax County, Virginia, and they are getting shorter. Women's life expectancy having declined by nearly 1.1% from 1987 to 2007. If the people here, and he lets this stand as its own whole paragraph. So proud for him. If the people here weren't 98.5% white, we'd call it a reservation. What a moron. He doesn't know that native blood runs through the veins of a whole lot of people in central Appalachia because the place was so hard to get into and out of that at the time of the forced relocation, commonly referred to as the Trail of Tears, a lot of native peoples went further into the mountains and hid and stayed hid. And left behind most of their traditions, but some of it outcrops still today in words, in speech patterns, and in fact in undeniable appearances. Because genetics will out. Notice the white. Notice the derogatory white bread reference. By the way, Kevin D. Williamson, it turns out, is from Lubbock, Texas. Ooh. So you have this thing starting out. And by the way, he has found himself a myth. The myth of the woman who gets her EBT card refilled at the first of the month and then goes out and buys a boatload of pop, trunk full, spends, and he alleges here, $500, spends $500 on Pepsi, and then sells it to an unscrupulous retailer who will buy her Pepsi from her for 50 cents on the dollar, giving her $250 hard cash for $500. At which point, we've run the math. How big a family do you have to get $500 a month in a supplemental nutrition assistance program benefits? Because it's important. Whatever facts this Kevin D. Williamson goob moron puts out about Appalachia, the only thing that the readers of National Review Online are going to come away with is, hey, them tax dollars that's been confiscatoried from us is being used to make a Pepsi black market in eastern Kentucky. I say we stop it now. That's all they're going to hear. There's a black market for Pepsi, and they trade the Pepsis for cigarettes and cash? Well, first of all, if you're getting $500 a month in SNAP benefits, that means you've got a pretty damn big family. Because if you've got any income at all, it works out to about $1 a day. So that's 60 for two, 120 for four, 240 for eight, 400. Wow! A family of 16 trades away its $500 in food stamps to buy Pepsi to sell it off to a soda pop black marketeer for 50 cents on the dollar. Yeah. Okie doke. Can we say make it up as you go along? Why not? But that's not the be all and end all of this nasty little screed. Because you'll recall, I shared that if the people here weren't 98.5% white, we'd call it a reservation. All right? So on and on and on and on. And the story is filled with picaresque tales of goofy drunken hillbillies. And eventually comes round to this. Sweet Jesus. A 2004 study found that the majority of impoverished households in Appalachia were headed by married couples, not single mothers. Remember Chappie Gordon talking about how it's so much better for a child to have a mother and a father, and that if it was two daddies or two mommies, some poor parent had been ungendered. Yeah. Getting and staying married is not a surefire prophylactic against poverty. Neither are prophylactics. Ah, see what he did there? Oh, he's well-versed in the art of knowing words. Kentucky has a higher teen motherhood rate than the national average, but not radically so, and its young mothers are more likely to be married. Kentucky is number 19 in the ranking of states by teen pregnancy rates, but it is number 8 when it comes to teen birth rates, according to the Guttmacher Institute. And then this. It's young women being somewhat less savage than most of their counterparts across the country. Still not okay with this. Somewhat less savage. You got that? Do all the females in the Horn family commune have that all the way down to the ground now? What Kevin D. Williamson of Lubbock, Texas, whose state has the highest incidence of uninsured Americans in the entire country, who I'm sure ran, not walked, but ran to the polls to vote for Rick Perry, and who will run again to the polls to vote for, what's his name, Abbott, Greg Abbott, who pals around with white supremacists, Greg Abbott. But then that wouldn't be anything new for a writer at National Review, would it? No. Kevin D. Williamson says that any woman who has ever made the quite often difficult choice about whether to terminate a pregnancy is, and this is his word, not mine, from an article in which he refers to, he compares Appalachian people to Native Americans who had an entire continent stolen from them and are forced onto a reservation, in which so he's basically comparing poor white Appalachians to Native Americans on a reservation, and then says the women folk are savages. Savages. Now, he has laid out in God knows how many words a picture of a place that nobody reading it would ever voluntarily go to live. A picture of a place where the only people choosing to live there do so because they've got 300 years of family ties, or they're too dumb to have moved away when they got a job at the Toyota plant in Georgetown, Kentucky, and then the roads are terrible, and they got black ice on them, and they're all slickety in the winter, and you get the idea. And then says that young women, teenage girls in Kentucky are slightly less savage than other teenage girls because they choose to bear children into that dystopia that Kevin D. Williamson has just gone to such great pains to describe. This is past comprehension. You know why so many teenage mothers in a place like Owsley County, Kentucky, are loath to get an abortion? because it's damn near impossible to get, never mind that $12 copay that has Chappie Klingenschmidt in such an uproar. So in many cases, it's not, you know, don't want to do that. It's ain't no way I can do that. And what if you're one of those teenage mothers to be raising a child in a mountaintop removal community, and you know that you've got 141% greater chance that your baby will have a respiratory birth defect than a smoking mother who doesn't live anywhere near mountaintop removal? What do? Pray? Hope? Do either one in one hand and in the other and see which one fills up first? So then this. Once we get past the assertion that somehow Appalachian teenage mothers are less savage than their counterparts in, where's he say, Florida. Or Rhode Island or Connecticut. Once he gets past that, then he explains what we've got to do about it. Get the tennis balls out, because this is, after all, National Review Online. And, you know, we've had the war on poverty was initiated in Appalachia. And so hauling out all the dog whistles, let's check in with Kevin D. Williamson of Lubbock, Texas. Welfare has made Appalachia into a big and sparsely populated housing project. Too backward to thrive, but just comfortable enough to keep the underclass in place. There is no cure for poverty because there is no cause of poverty. Poverty is the natural condition of the human animal. Anybody want to have a run at that? Anybody want to write? Because that line. Let's go through that again. There is no cure for poverty because there is no cause of poverty. Poverty is the natural condition of the human animal. Were that even remotely the case, humanity would never have made it through, say, the first 50,000 years of its existence. The essence of hunting and gathering is an effort to not be mired in poverty. Even the, some would say, misguided decision to settle down and start raising crops was an effort to not be hungry. Poverty, then, is not the human condition. But then again, that's not this joker's brief. His brief is to show that there's no sense in trying to do anything in Appalachia because, after all, the free market and because money. But then again, he says, poverty is the natural condition of the human animal. It is not as though labor and enterprise are unknown here. Digging coal is hard work. Farming is hard work. Timbering is hard work. So hard that the best and brightest long ago packed up for Cincinnati or Pittsburgh or Memphis or Houston. There is to this day an Appalachian bar in Detroit and ex-Appalachian enclaves around the country The lesson of the big white ghetto is the same as the lessons we learned about the urban housing projects in the late 20th century. The best public policy treatment we have for poverty is dilution. But like the old project towers, the Appalachian draw culture, that means welfare, produces concentration, a socioeconomic Salton Sea that becomes more toxic waste looming over communities through... Nah, that has nothing to do with it. Digging. Hard work. The fact that a mono economy took away every possibility for a kid who didn't want to work in the mines and has created a culture that has more in common with the Gaza Strip than it does with most of the rest of America has nothing to do. Goddamn right-wingers, I hate their freaking guts sometimes. We'll take a break. I got more morons. We are $45 toward the $300 we're trying to raise tonight. Everything helps from $5 on up to raise up 2 weeks' worth of funds in this week, this four-day week. The equipment proves to be non-cooperative in Washington, D.C. next week. We won't come, well, we'll have the bills paid before we go. It's that simple. The lines are open, 304-658-3333, or on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. Pick a moron, any moron. Chime right in. It is, after all, Conversation Radio. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Right, Route 23 to just laid away the city factory. They didn't know that that old highway lead them to a world of misery. Have you ever been down Kentucky way, say south of Prestonsburg? Have you ever been up in Holler? Have you ever heard a mountain man cough his life away, digging that black coal in those dark mines, those dark mines? If you had, you might just understand the reason that they left it all behind. They learned reading and writing, Route 23 to the job. Factory. They learned reading, writing, roads to the north, to the luxury, comfort, a coal miner and a fall. They thought reading, writing, Route 23, hard to take them to the good life they had never seen. They didn't know that that old highway laid them to a world of misery. Have you ever seen them put the kids in the car after work on Friday night? Pull up in a holler about 2 a.m. Light still burning bright. The little mountain folks set up that late to hold those little grandkids in their arms, in their arms. Yet I'm proud to say that I've been blessed and touched by their sweet hillbilly charm. They learned reading, writing, Route 23. They learned reading, writing, roads to the north, to the luxury, comfort, a coal miner can't afford. They thought reading, writing, Route 23, how to take them to the good life they had never seen. They didn't know that old highway world, Miss
Dwight Yoakam. The album Hillbilly Deluxe from 1987, Read and Write and Route 23. And we're going straight to the phones, but I got to share with you that there's a resonance of truth in that song. Because that line about putting the babies in the car on Friday night and heading to the hills, well, granted, it wasn't Route 23 or anything, but I know that from my own childhood, because I was the baby that the grandparents stayed up late to see. The minute you got in, we went and did rounds. Since my dad's folks were the first folks we'd drive near, we'd stop in there and stop there, and then we'd come on up here. Only it was a much longer drive, and sometimes it'd be more like getting in at 4 or 5 in the morning and folks getting up early. So, yeah, it's real. It's real. And note the ugly fascist undertones of Kevin D. Williamson in saying the only cure to poverty is dilution. Wow. Dilution is another word for depopulation, and this place has been depopulating for... And it's been conscious since the end of the Second World War. This place has been depopulated. There is an Appalachian brain drain that most anybody can tell you about. How's that working out? Not so well. Asa pointing out, by the way, Bob the Moran today is super strong. If this was a cannabis show, today's Moran would be Bin Laden weed. Yeah, strong and mind-bending. So let's go to the conversation portion of the program. A couple of lines remaining open. Folks on hold already. 304-658-3333. We will go to the Skype line and our buddy the Angry Indian. Hey, Angry.
Hey, my man. What's going on?
I don't know it. But we got some awesome audio, so that's very cool.
Okay, that's good. I mean, when you sent me this morning, when this one of the first things I saw, and then the first thing when I looked over to my wife, I was like, you know, Tennessee Ernie Ford, I mean, what would he have to say about this? You know, I mean, this type of thing, I mean, people really shouldn't be surprised. And
well, I mean, there's nothing surprising in this because, again, it's at National Review.
Yeah, it's the National Review, and, you know, people really should not be surprised. But what I think is really jerking a lot of folks when they read this, if they can get the whole reservation and savages thing, you know, together in their head.
But to be fair, those things are attenuated. You got to be paying attention to catch that. And I don't know how many people caught that besides me.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm wondering that, too. I mean, we just had a controversy like that with the canceled Colbert scandal that went on last week that really amounted to a lot of confusion over the same thing. You know, I mean, when we talk about racism, people really never think of the Ulster Scots.
No.
They never think in terms of, you know, ethnic robbery. I mean, he tries to qualify what he was saying by mentioning the Battle of Culloden, right?
Lord Cumberland.
Yeah, Cumberland, right? Yeah, so he tries to tie everything back to, you know, Scottish heritage and what have you. But, I mean, when he mentions dilution, and then he talks about reservations, and says that these savages are not as savage as the other savage white communities that can be found along the eastern seaboard.
Oh, but he says Florida, too, so, you know, it's not all white folks angry.
Well, it's not all white folks, but that's who he was talking about in this particular case. You know, he's equating, you know, the Ulster Scots, you know, pretty much Appalachian poor whites, with the entire, you know, meme, if we want to use that term, of savages. And now, of course, there's the class thing. And, yeah, there's an old ethnic rivalry in terms of, I wouldn't call the rivalry as more than the UK looking down on the Scots-Irish and using the Scots-Irish as Exodus fodder in Ireland, in the States. But, you know, the whole idea that, you know, poverty, I mean, his comments about poverty are totally ridiculous. They're totally ridiculous. And then he talks about
poverty
the
is the natural human state. Did you just want to go running into the yard with that one?
Yeah, I mean, only the Koch. Well, the Koch brothers are pushing this type of rhetoric. This is what Paul Ryan is talking about, right? So now, you know, it's too easy to beat up on natives, right? It's really easy to beat up on African people. And for those poor white folks who will listen to this show, for those of you who thought that you were outside of this, you know, been trying to tell you for many years, you're not. And if this article doesn't prove it, I don't know what is. I mean, how smart was this to write while people are talking about the next, you know, presidential election?
Well, but I was about to self-contradict, Angry, because on the one hand, isn't this the 47% argument all over again? But at the same time, and something that our dear author here, Mr. Williamson, doesn't point out, that place that he's talking about voted overwhelmingly for Bishop Willard Romney in the last presidential cycle. Given any half an opportunity, they will run, not walk, not crawl to the polls to vote for Rand Paul or Mitch McConnell. Well, Mitch is in trouble in this case because there's somebody actually more hateful, and they'll vote for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, you kind of wonder why people vote against their best interests, you know, but these are the same folks that were, you know, beefing with you and I online about why we weren't supporting Bush when he was there. Why we didn't have anything good to say about him.
Well, yeah.
You know, I mean, everything that you know, he's doing, even the current administration, in terms of simply being poor people in the U.S., totally going against all of the, you know, the possible, you know, interests that should be recognized by the powers that be, and it's not happening. So, you know, again, when we see who, I don't know anything about the particular author here, but, you know,
I've never heard of this clown before in my life, but he's on my radar now.
We know who he is now. You know, he starts off with the white ghetto. You know, I mean, frankly, I didn't know what to think because I think it's time to start talking about the white ghettos in the U.S. and stop talking just about black and native people like this. Why don't we start talking about some of the white communities that I can point out where people are really struggling? You know, and he mentions Appalachia. And when I first looked at it, I said, oh, well, so, you know, maybe they looked at Bob's people here and gave them. But then I read down and I was like, oh, they wrote about them the way they write about us. And then it's like, well, hell, you know, it's the National Review. So, you know, my question is, or at least what I think a lot of people should be asking, is what is the benefit to the GOP to write this type of piece at this particular time?
And I don't disagree with you. I've been thinking about that all day, and I don't have an answer.
You know, because especially with the tie-in here with the Redskins thing, especially after what just happened with the canceled Colbert flare-up, which ended up really going
Jesus, God, did you see the photo out of Cleveland this weekend?
Which one? There's all kinds of photos online nowadays.
Oh, well, no, this was the guy who decided to go to an Indians game in red face.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, how many times has that happened, too? I mean, you know, there's plenty of photographs like that. There's a well-known photograph of a African man, a black man, who's supposed to be one of the strongest cheerleaders for the Redskins. And he loves to have his photograph taken when he's wearing a war bonnet, a Plains war bonnet. I mean, there's even another photograph of a Native American head, a severed, decapitated head on the edge of a spike being held up by a fan. You know, I don't know if it's for the Redskins, anti-Redskins, you know, what have you. I mean, that's not that big of a surprise. It's just that now people are paying more attention because of the controversy. But see, you know, they tend to, when you want to talk about the poorest in America, they like to point to Native American communities, but they never say how Native American communities got that way. You know, it's just like when it had to be the NRA, they put out a billboard, I forgot where, here. Oh, was it Colorado? With three natives holding rifles saying, well, they took their guns, you know, meaning, well, they took guns from Native Americans and they wiped Native Americans out. So if they take our guns, they're going to wipe us out. Well, who is going to wipe out whom? You know?
Right, because, and well, you know, who is they?
Who is they? Who is they? So, I mean, the way
they
they're talking about, yeah, I mean, the way they're talking about your people here is they. You're now the other. I mean, you always were the other, but now they've made it clear. And I hope the people of Appalachia take that seriously when they start to go to the polls in 2016 to vote for a new executive chief warmonger. Because what they're saying is, you are too stupid to survive. Why should we put any effort into you? If you weren't dumb enough to leave those mill jobs, if you couldn't go into the mine or what have you, that's your problem. It's the same thing they said to people in Katrina. If you didn't have any, you didn't get yourself out, then what happened to you was your problem.
And you know, what? I mean, if you want to work a continuum of stupid angry, I guess that puts me at the top of the damn list, because I was born out, more or less. I mean, granted, where I grew up was still Appalachia, but not like central Appalachia. I grew up in a considerably different culture.
Mm-hmm.
And all those years when all of my friends, and I mean, this is, I'll tell you honestly, that one line about the grandbabies in the song I played at the break, I had a couple of tears dribble out of my eyes. Because that was real. That was very real. When all of the neighbor kids were saying, "Oh, we're going to Disney World. Oh, we're going to the beach. Oh, we're blah 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 blah. Where are you going?" Back to West Virginia. And all of those years rubbed off on me, and dumbass me, angry, who was out, who was away, came back. So what kind of stupid does that make me?
Well, it makes you the kind of stupid American activist that they don't appreciate. You actually got an idea of what both worlds were like. You had your foot in both, and then you decided to come back and help your people. See, that's the type of thing that they want to discourage. You know, they do not want to hear what the people who actually, if they have access to your show, if they have access to other progressive media, if they have access to alternative media, where they could ask these questions and really be able to ask Mitch McConnell, really be able to ask Blankenship, really be able to ask the people who just poisoned the water over there in West Virginia, you know, how it is that they're doing what they're doing. You know, so what I get from this piece, and I've read most of it so far, that they're basically saying they just need to turn their backs on your folks. And they used every excuse here that they used against natives in terms of, this is a group of people we can really live without, to make that argument.
Jesus.
And I'm just curious on how this is going to work out when it goes to the polls.
That's you just said. I mean, I've got. I admit, angry, an outrage tripwire where outsiders talking about Appalachia is concerned. I got a note last night saying, CBS did 30 solid minutes on the struggle for health care in West Virginia. I didn't get to see it. I'm going to try to. But, you know, my outrage switch is going to be at Hair Trigger. Because I remember what happened when Diane Sawyer came in here to a mountaintop removal community, saw a child with no teeth, with its teeth rotting out of its head, and declared that to be caused by something called Mountain Dew mouth, in which children were given soda pop from the bassinet, if they have a bassinet, on up. When in fact we know that there are children whose parents are, you know, "Honey, brush after every meal. Did you floss?" "Yes, okay, floss some more." But it turns out they were doing their brushing and their flossing with poisoned water, and it dissolved the teeth in their heads.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, somebody like Diane Sawyer comes down from New York and talks about Mountain Dew mouth.
Well, she's going to say what they tell her to say. You know, I mean, she believes in the system, and it couldn't possibly be the fault of big business. It couldn't possibly be the fault of regulators who give their okay and signatures to these sorts of things. You have to blame the people there. I mean, you have an area, if we're going to talk about Florida, you have an area down there called Cancer Row.
Yep.
Everybody there suffers from some form of cancer. Everybody there. They've been testing on those folks and dumping things on the people of Florida, all of the poor communities there. There was a soap company that recently, several years ago, was testing on children. They gave out
Oh yeah, you remember? Yeah, I remember. You get free T-shirts and a video cam if you'll test these pesticides on your children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I'll say this: the majority of them were of color, but not all of them, because there were a lot of white families too who wanted to find out what was going on and thought it was maybe an opportunity to do something. You know, some of them I heard thought that it was a cattle call for young models or something. And, they got a lot of misinformation, and they never told these people what happened to them. And haven't there been cases of human experimentation on the people of Appalachia as well? Case studies?
Well, it depends. It depends on how you define that. I mean, I personally think that there's one going on now in the wake of the Freedom Industries disaster. But the fact of the matter is, there's human experimentation been going on for as long as dynamite's been going off in these hills. The coal industry itself is one long human experiment on just how much poison human beings can take. I worry, Angry, sometimes, that people think I'm exaggerating or making more out of it than what it is. But in any other part of the country, would over 100,000 industrial dead in 100 years, would that be cause for concern? Would it be cause for alarm? Would something be done?
Who the victims are.
Right, and
you
just made my blood run cold when you said that this represents a decision that this is another chunk of people that this country can just as well do without. I mean, if in fact this myth of the soda pop black market is real, then what does that say about the mama who trades away $500 worth of retail value food stamps, EBT, for $250 cash? Now, I know the assumptions that this guy wants us to make about what she's going to do with that $250 cash. She's going to go buy pills or meth or booze or beer or dope. But what if she needs the $200, again, assuming this whole thing is real, what if she needs the $250 to pay a power bill that's gotten up to $1,500 because of a brutal damned winter? And because LIHEAP, the low-income heating assistance program, has been cut off at the knees by the God-fearing, upstanding Republican majority. What if that's the case?
Well, you have to have lived rough. You'd have to have lived poor. You'd have experienced that to understand that. Because, you know, if all you understand about poverty is what you see in the movies, or maybe what you've heard in a song or two, and don't really know what it's like to have to make a choice between paying a food, bill or paying your rent or medicine, then, you don't understand that the choices that poor people make and end up in vicious cycles of, repetitive self-hurt is because they're doing things, minute by minute to survive, because life goes minute by minute. I mean, when I've been very, very, very broke, I mean, I literally counted the hours, when I was going to have my next meal, I mean, I know what
that's
like.
We've been there too.
But the people who make these decisions, it's not something that they think about. And a lot of people that vote that don't have to deal with this is not something that they think about when these stories are brought forth and people are making their complaints. They listen to Paul Ryan because, he looks smart and he has a degree and he's being backed by people who are very powerful and everybody's clapping and smiling, even though he's being discredited 5 minutes every time he says something, it doesn't really seem to matter. But poverty in America is viewed as something that is temporary.
That's a hell of a definition of temporary, Angry.
But that's the way people look at it here. This is the bill of goods that we've been sold by the public relations. This is Edward Bernays. This is all the stuff that the really esoteric political activists talk about in terms of how we got to this point in terms of how the American people, you know, went from being very pragmatic, being very hard to fool, you know, pretty much everybody being from Missouri, you know, show me, to now we just take whatever is being thrown at us. Rumsfeld is a perfect example of the American appetite now for complete and utter nonsense taken as fact. So this is why the National Review can feel that it can write something like this and get away with it. You know, this is not Eisenhower's Republican Party. This is not William Buckley's Republican Party. You know, we're dealing now with people who have absolutely no integrity at all, and they don't mind stretching the truth, and they don't mind causing further class dissension in order to get what they want. And right now they're saying that if the water in West Virginia is polluted and if mountaintop removal is harming the environment in Appalachia and along the eastern seaboard, and we're going to have all this damage, and of course these people are going to get sick, well, we need to start finding a way to blame them. We need to start finding a way to get it in the minds of the, at least the conservative voting public, that these people are pretty much useless. Just like Native Americans, they're useless. That's why he made the allusion to it. They're useless. We put money into Native Americans. We put money into reservations. You hear this all the time. You know, and people believe that every Native American gets a huge check every month, right? Everybody's per cap check is huge. You know, the sitting on money board don't have anything else to do. Maybe they're spending it all in the casinos, because we all know that we've given them every goddamn opportunity to succeed. And here we have these people. And for a lot of people who don't know anything about the area, like you said, it, you know, really gets you upset when people talk about your community, because what they know about, you know, Appalachia is hee-haw. That's all they know. You know, maybe they've heard a song or two. They know a particular artist or two. They think about Elvis maybe, but that's all they think. Appalachia is just another part of the South, and it's just a place that we need to give a damn about. And the Republicans...
So does this mean, Angry, I mean, if we just kind of try to step back away from this a little bit, does this mean that any effort to right wrongs here is by definition a futile one?
They would like us to accept that. I mean, the Occupy movement, that's what happened to them. I mean, while everyone's talking about Ukraine and everyone's talking about Venezuela in terms of these popular democratic uprisings, what would happen if a group of people got together to stand against mountaintop removal or stand against this energy company that polluted the water over there? How would they be treated? How are they treating them now? I mean, what has happened when you've gone to protest, when you go to Washington, D.C. to speak on these issues? How are you being received? How has the Occupy movement been treated? They don't want people to have the idea that you actually have a right to demand your rights. And if this is a way to get the people down there to not go to these protests, to not ask questions about water quality, which we've been told kind of might actually put you on a list if you ask about your water quality, if you ask about the air quality, if you ask why your elected representative...
Well, if that's the case, I've been living on that list for a while, so...
Yeah, probably. But, you know, this is a way to, you know, let the conservative thinking, voting public know, who get online and read the National Review, and they're probably putting us out to test the waters to see how it's going to come across, that can we demonize and pretty much politically erase this particular group of people? Because that way, as we start to realize how much damage Duke Energy really did, and now that the information is coming out nonstop on how much damage is being done with the AIC and everything else, that these various initiatives, how can we stop the train? Well, we... you know, make the messengers look like they're the source of their own problems. Because remember, inbreeding is probably what's causing a hell of a lot of the health problems up there as far as they're concerned.
Oh, hell yes, absolutely. Just ask the National Mining Association and the fine folks over at that law firm in D.C. by the name of Crowell Mooring. Fine people.
I mean, it causes everything from black lung to liver failure, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, apparently...
Apparently, just thinking about it is debilitating, because there's plenty of people who aren't, but they are getting sick too. And I'm not going to quit. I'm not going to quit, and the people that I work with are not going to quit. My colleague Bo is up in D.C. right now, and I'm not at liberty to discuss it until such time as he tells me I am, but I've got a big case of, oh, my God, what the f- going on right now because of some stuff that I've heard over the course of regarding a meeting that was had over the course of the day today. And, you know, I guess we're never going to get a Diane Sawyer to just, you know, move. I mean, wow, would that be some hard-hitting, penetrating journalism? Diane Sawyer moves up the holler. And learns to live on and get by on next to nothing. And lives in constant fear and worries about things like winter that have never been a second thought to her in her existence. But I guess that's never going to happen. And I don't want to give any credence to the right wing or the teabaggers or the idiot. You know, I saw a rusted out pickup truck today, and it had a Gadsden flag on it, a silhouette of a semi-automatic rifle, and a Friends of Coal sticker.
Yeah.
But
they won't talk about them like that.
Oh, no. No, no.
Those are good Americans.
But I don't want to give credence to the right wing, but you really would like to have, because the right wing likes to play that card about, you know, outsiders from Washington and what have you. I don't want to give any credence to that, but it would be beneficial if some of the people who profess to be on our side would come down here and get side by side with us. Because I think after about a month of wondering what you were breathing and what you were ingesting and what you were bathing in, they'd run screaming out of the holler and would come nigh to setting themselves on fire at the White House gates to make it stop. But that ain't gonna happen. So, you know, once again, we're left with certain realities. And one of those is one of the things I was talking about last week, you know, the pollution that blanketed London and parts of Northern Europe.
Mm.
Well, those are the same poisons we breathe every damn day. But by God, it made the news because it was London and Northern Europe.
Mm. Yeah.
Those are the same ultrafine particles that come down in toxic clouds every time a blast goes off up above a community. I mean, we've got photographic documentary evidence of this shit happening. But
if you get enough people to raise enough hell and who say something bizarre happened and, you know, some rich Democrat came around and gave you all of the funds you need to start your own super PAC to get this done, maybe on the international level, how do you think that would then be received and dealt with by the powers that be?
Oh,
this is what they're trying to prevent.
Yeah. Well, I think it is. But even then, I think there's probably a plan for dealing with it. You know, that's outside interference. That's outside agitators. That's meddling. Because see, we've
limited their talking points.
We've got a bunch of young people that have come down, and they come down year in and year out through a program that's called Mountain Justice. And it's very loose and very leaderless, and they just try to come down and think about solutions and actually live here for a little while. And to their credit, they do live here, and they don't go running screaming into the night. And some of them have just decided to say, hell with it, I'm staying. And we might not always agree on tactics, but, you know, I do admire the guts and gumption it takes to, you know, what's it say in the book, be ye doers of the word and not hearers only. We got a lot of people who are really good at hearing angry and hard-pressed for doing.
Well, why don't you invite Kevin D. Williamson down there and, you know, tell him to come and see for himself the people he was writing about.
Well, you know, I was going to suggest earlier, don't necessarily put this story away yet, Angry, because you said you were analyzing and absorbing the text. Once you get done with that and the screaming that induces, then start reading the comments.
Oh, yeah, that's always fun.
You come for the wing nuttery, but you stay for the comments, because this isn't I went through a good number of them. This is not the typical right-wing hoorah session that your average National Review article is. There's a lot of pissed off hillbillies on that thread.
Yeah, I see. Right now it was 2,436 comments.
One of them's mine.
Yeah. So, you know, hey, tell them what you think, my man. Tell them what you think. And you keep pushing out there. You know, and everybody, if you can make a donation to Head On Radio, please do, so you can keep Bob on the air.
Thank you, Angry. I really appreciate it. I hated to even push that idea out there that we're going to try to do 2 weeks worth of fundraising in one, but I didn't see any alternative. And by the way, tell folks how they can get your program, please.
You can check out Intelligent Aboriginal Radio at aboriginalradio.wordpress.com. You can get the feeds, you can get the list of what we have going on there. And if you want us to talk about a particular subject, drop us a line, angryindianrajo@gmx.se.
Cool. Well, I really appreciate the conversation. I do. You always bring a hell of a lot of insight to the table, and that makes for, well, it makes for engaging conversation radio. No getting around it.
Well, I'm glad you're talking about it. And, you know, I do want to say Appalachia, you know, for a lot of people who have never been through there, you know, a lot of what that article said is true. There's a lot of poverty. I mean, there's a lot of depression, and you'll find that in any depressed area anywhere in the world. But see, the thing is, you know, it's pretty clear now that they would like to separate and cause even more division than even I was, I was willing to give them credit for, and they are going this far. So, you know, when you read this, you know, read it two or three times if you have to. There's a lot of things in this piece that deserve, you know, some attention. And, you know, if you really care about what's going on, if you're upset by not just what this man wrote, but the way he went through describing what is, you know, the truth. There's a lot of poverty up there. Listen to Bob and help him with his movements, man, because that's the only way this is going to get fixed if we stand up and do something about it.
Well, thank you very much, Angry. You have yourself a good evening.
All right, you too, pal.
Bye now. Our buddy, the Angry Indian. Indigenous Radio. Check out the website. He does a hell of a show. And you know, I don't necessarily want to make More in Monday, you know, all about this particular article, but it's a, as compared to the average fluff that you get on a More in Monday, this seemed to, and I really appreciate Benny putting this out there for us. This thing's got legs, because if you just say, well, they're poor, and then you turn your back and say, because that's how poor people are, well, you kind of miss the point. This is, you know, this is a resource cursed region. And for instance, those of you who are my friends on Facebook, I've had it up there for a very long time now, on my, you know, on the landing page there, that picture of the woman and her children standing in front of the shack. Well, that's around 1910. That's just barely 100. It may just now be 100 years ago, and that's two generations back from me. Three if you count the adult woman. But let's also remember that while it's easy to look at that and say, poverty, the people in that photograph drank clean, clear water. They breathed clean, clear air. They did not eat genetically modified organism food. They produced most of what they needed on that farm. The elders lived into their 90s at a time when the average lifespan in the United States was closer to 50. And they were not unique in that long life. In some instances, they spun their own cloth. In others, they sold their excess produce to buy things they couldn't raise, like sugar, and cloth, or maybe shotgun shells, or rifle shells for hunting. They raised their own hogs, they raised their own beef, they milked their own cows. And while it's easy to look at that photograph on my Facebook page and say, huh, look at that, poor people. How poor were they? I don't think, in that photograph, I don't think there's a cancer death in there. Now, if I'm not mistaken, the babe in arms winds up dying in the Battle of the Bulge. The little boy standing off to one side winds up getting gassed in the trenches of the First World War. The girls go on to be educators. And they all live into their 90s. The youngest one only died within the last decade and a half. There's an external construct that has been superimposed on life that is exactly that, a construct. Was there disease? Was there brutal death? Absolutely. This is about the same time that the mines are opening up, and some of the relatives of the people in that photograph died like flies down in the hole. And they died on the railroad. But the same did not necessarily obtain out in that intensely sustainable way of living. After her first day of school, my grandmother came home to that farm. And she called her father, whose name was Ozias. She called him Poppy. And after her first day of school at the age of 6, because this was the beginning of the great experiment in public education, it had been a one-room school, and she was among the youngest, of course. And he said, "Well, Idie, how did you like school?" And she said, "Oh, Poppy, I loved it." He said, "Well, what did you like so much?" And she said, "I like learning." And he said, "What sort of learning?" And she said, "All of it. Learning is like drinking cool water to me." And she would tell me this story several times in her 90th year. How many of us, running across something that really resonates with us, who get our water from a tap, from a public water company, would ever think of comparing something as wonderful as learning with a drink of cool water? Of course, the water that she was talking about was not something that came in from West Virginia American Water Company. It was something that came brilliant and near freezing out of the ground, or out of the spring at the side of the hill that kept the dairy products, the eggs and the milk, cool even in the heat of summer. And just because it's Appalachia doesn't mean it's unique. That happens throughout this country. And the downside of it is what has happened after the deliberate, what was the phrase that Kevin D. Williamson used after the deliberate dilution of poverty. And by the way, that shack in that photograph, as I've mentioned before, that shack in that photograph, that poverty, poor-looking shack, it was built in, oh God, the 1880s. It's still standing right now. Yeah. Ponder that. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the welcome to the program.
Is that me?
That's you. Is that John?
Oh, hey. Hey, Bob. Yeah, it's John. How you doing?
I'm good. How about you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Listen, that was a beautiful story. The one thing that came to my mind, just because this is where I am these days, did the multi-great grandfather there? Do you think when the daughter was born, do you think he went back to work that same night?
No. Yeah. Then again, all the he never left work.
Well, yeah. Was he in the mines or what was he?
No, he was a farmer.
Oh, right. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I missed part of the story. But yeah, I would imagine that even if it was high harvest time, that was probably a day to be with the wife, I would think.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, there were different sensibilities then, but I'm almost certain that he did some serious pacing of those rough hewn floors, and I think he did it about 8 more times.
I would imagine so, and if they had the services of a doctor, I'm sure he was right there, even before, as Mr. Francesca says, the natural childbirth movement or whatever.
Oh, Jesus.
What a tool.
What a tool, John.
To a savage in that, I think, but, I don't want to spend too much time on the impression. Listen, I'm just joining, and I don't know if you guys have gone on this, but this war on women and childbirth is really just eating me up inside. I don't know if y'all have talked about it already or not, but I'd like to go back to it.
Well, go right ahead, please. I want to know what your perspective is.
Yeah, I mean I sent you the piece over the weekend about Walmart.
Right.
Bravely changing its policy to accommodate women who are pregnant, to give them jobs so they can occasionally sit down, even if it's not in their department, and they made this change after a whole bunch of bad press, including a number of women who were, as they say, associates of Walmart, because they're just like Sam Walton, a number of associates had suffered severe medical problems because they were not allowed to take breaks, they were not allowed to sit down. And Walmart is now bravely, allowing them to, certain accommodations. And I don't think that, I'm not comforted by that at all, because my feeling was they should have been doing this. They should have been treating these employees like human beings from the beginning, not after women miscarried because of overwork and stress.
Right. What's
lost their jobs?
Right. What's so hard about that? Why is that so hard for the upper management of Wally World to get through? I mean, are the upper management of Walmart clones? I mean, were they grown in a tank?
Maybe we could have that discussion, let's assume for the moment that no. I think that the fact is they know that the pesky thing about this is that people complained, damn it, and the press picked it up. We're in a place now where workers are replaceable, even more so than they were, because people are out of work. And, if you got an employee who's not walking their line, doing what Barbara Ehrenreich described and nickel and dimed, folding the clothes and that sort of thing, there's 250 other people who would love to have that minimum wage job with their benefit.
And the sad thing, John, is that that's not particularly new. After all, and I've discussed it at length from time to time, the Hawk's Nest Tunnel disaster, which happened not at all far from where I am now, that killed officially hundreds, but more likely thousands, because they really didn't want to be counting that badly. If a man came walking out of the tunnel site, coughing his lungs up and said, "Boss, I need a break." The boss said, "Well, you just take a break and don't come back, because right over there, you see him? He wants your job. You don't want to work? That's fine."
Yeah, nice long break. Right?
Yeah. Eternal peace.
Yeah.
I think in particular, going back to the Smithfield Meats plant in Tar Heel, North Carolina, which everybody who was ever near there told me you could smell long before you could see, where they slaughter 32,000 hogs per day, and probably more now that we're also providing pork products to China. One of the central complaints there is that the women, and it was mostly women who were working on the slaughter line, wielding blades, razor sharp, and you know what those knives, I mean butcher knives,
yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
On a conveyor belt flying by, women who were pregnant were not allowed to take maternity leave until they went into labor.
Yeah.
And you had, with those knives and the speed, you had horrible injuries. And I guess, do we just write this off to the manifest hypocrisy of the right wing, John, and say, well, this just proves that all that talk about how much they cherish the little babies is just so much BS? Because if they really cared, they'd be picketing outside that plant instead of outside some sort of women's health care clinic.
Yeah, I mean, you could do that, and there's a benefit to that. But you could write it off to them being the protectors, the apologists of this capitalist system. I mean, I think that's for all the ideas of little incremental reform that's good. I mean, it's the system that hurts. I mean, your examples are closer to home and closer in time. You know, where I went immediately was, sorry to some folks, is Engels and his book, The Condition of the Working Class in England. It's an easy read. It's a tiny little book. It's about the 1840s and the, factory system in England and men and women and children.
And don't think for a minute that people that we look up to as literary giants like Dickens weren't reading the very same thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. No, it is. And it's just that this is, I mean, incremental, liberal reform brought us the Family Medical Leave Act, which is beneficial for some people, no doubt. I mean, I'm glad it's there. But how different are people now faced with the privilege of taking 2 weeks of unpaid leave from those folks in England? I mean, they are slightly better, yes. Some people can avail themselves of that. But that's not an option for the majority of people. And if it's not an option for the majority of people, then how does that free them?
Right, exactly. It's thanks for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we on a broader, more general scope, we had the story last week about most of, even we know that that Americans have less vacation time than anybody else in the so-called industrialized world. Well, it turns out that even those American workers who have vacation time don't get to use it.
Yeah.
So the whole thing is a system. It's a brutal system that is geared toward nothing but the most hateful forms of oppression. What good is maternal leave if you can't afford 6 weeks without a payday?
Yeah. It's not. It doesn't seem like much good. To me, if you can afford it, it's wonderful, and you should take it, and I am happy you can. You know, it's just that it's not really a great stride. It's not a stride that would benefit the greatest country in the world. It's just depressing. And I mean, even when you have the ability to do it, then what happens when you face all these social sanctions against doing it? And I mean, I don't. Professional baseball players like Mr. Murphy, they work, and they are represented by unions, and I salute that, and they're well paid, and that's good, and I think everybody ought to be well paid the way that they are. So what happens when you face the sanctions in the locker room and in the media for trying to do what you are one of the few privileged who actually can take some time off and be there when your damn baby is born? It's just, it's revolting to me, and it's It's insulting to women. It's insulting to families. And it's of a piece with this this Walmart thing, I think.
I think you're absolutely right. And, of course, Walmart is always nice, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and there's no constituency for that, it seems like, and you need a constituency nowadays. I mean, you know that better than anybody, of course, with the work you're doing, which is good. Again, I mean, I'm sort of down on the idea of liberal reform. What you're doing is vitally important, and I wish it would pass. You more than anybody, I think, would acknowledge that if the AIC Act passed tomorrow, that would be the beginning of the job we have to do.
Yeah, right? that's nothing ends at that point. I mean, and frankly, it feels a little bit like a personal heresy, John, for me to say this, but the AIC Act is one aspect of the work that needs to be done. It's the aspect that will end the process that's causing all the problems. But then we need, you know, and of course, you know, Kevin D. Williamson with his Appalachia article, I'm sure this would be heresy to him, but, you know, we need a Marshall Plan for West Virginia. We need a Marshall Plan for Central Appalachia. You can argue that we need a Marshall Plan for all the oppressed sacrifice zone communities, where, you know, where we make this, you know, and quit, you know, let's don't ever call anything a war on anything again. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
But let's have a concerted effort to build a place up, because, you know, and this is one of those things that the right wing just glosses over. If social building programs don't work, then how did the West lift Europe out of the rubble or the ashes of the Second World War? It can be done, but it is a matter of will, is it not?
It is. They wouldn't do it today. That there's no way that could be approved today. And look at what it's done for those folks after they're out of the ruins of the war. You know,
yeah.
And there's a direct benefit, and if we can spend the dollars at home, then there's a direct benefit. And it's the same thing with education and testing. I mean, there's a nightmare going on in New York State as far as Cuomo. Cuomo is a disaster, and teaching and testing is a mess in New York. And I'd like to call about that some other time. But we what Dr. Bill's been talking about. I mean, the idea that narrowly educating people is going to benefit us is a total fallacy. You know, but we refuse to invest in people who need it. We refuse to invest in mothers, in fathers, in children. The problem is so clear, and it's frustrating. The problems are so clear, and it's frustrating that people don't see it, and I refuse to believe that they don't see it. They don't want to see it.
Yeah, it's not inability. It is unwillingness.
It's unwillingness. Yeah.
I mean, I've got this quote from this story that, and if you came late to the program, I think you're going to want to go read it. It's on my Facebook page. I think I tweeted it.
Okay.
But it's called The White Ghetto, and we're talking about this National Review, and, of course, National Review being, you know,
Oh, God, a sewer.
Yeah, thank you. That's exact. It's a sewer.
Yeah.
But this is a particularly stunning exemplar of the type.
It's the fetid corner of the sewer, the most fetid corner.
Yeah, it's where all the really nasty stuff sinks.
Yeah.
But this guy from Lubbock, Texas, presumes to provide an overview of the failings of Appalachian people, welfare in general. And at one point, and I have to tell you, and it's just because of the relationship that we've built up over time, sometimes I read things and I go, I really need to hear from Dr. John on this.
Oh.
And this particular line, poverty is the natural state of humanity.
No, God damn it.
See, I knew.
The natural state of humanity is cooperation. You don't live on the savannah as a rugged individual. It's just, it's so absurd. It's people who don't, again, who refuse to, like, look at evidence. I'm sorry. Please continue.
No. I mean, just let that thing bang around for a while. Poverty is the natural state of humanity. I'm desperately trying to pull the quote right now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, this is the same, if it's the natural state of humanity, if differences in intelligence and ability are innate and biological, then there's no point. Let's let the X group of people just go to hell in their own way. Any sort of attempt to intervene is pernicious and doomed to failure. So screw great society, screw war on poverty, screw affirmative action, all that stuff. It's pointless. There's no point in doing it. And it's demonstrably false. It's immoral, and
can we go so well, I know we hesitate to haul out words like this, but can we haul out evil and wicked for this one?
Well, it's evil and wicked. I mean, there's elements of that in fascism. I mean, yeah, obviously, yeah, sure.
And when you see this thing, and I don't generally inflict this kind of stuff on people, but I really hope you'll take a read at it and maybe come back with some more observations, because first of all, Benny put this on my Facebook page. This was one of the first things I saw this morning, at which point, you know, Bob Kincaid, you know, more outrage, less hair.
Drawing the tequila in at 6:30.
Yeah, right, exactly. Where is it? We went through some of this, but just because you'll love it, he refers to teen pregnancy in Kentucky and then teen birth rates in Kentucky, noting that, Kentucky has a higher teen motherhood rate than the national average, but not radically so, and its young mothers are more likely to be married. Kentucky is number 19 in the ranking of states by teen pregnancy rates, but it's number 8 when it comes to teen birth rates. And here's the get the tennis ball and the duct tape part. According to the Guttmacher Institute, young women in Kentucky are somewhat less savage than most of their counterparts across the country.
Less savage?
Yeah, meaning that they carry the babies, they carry their teen pregnancies to term.
Wow, that's savagery, huh? Huh.
Yeah. There it is. Here it is. Welfare has made Appalachia into a big and sparsely populated housing project, too backward to thrive, but just comfortable enough to keep the underclass in place. There is no cure for poverty because there is no cause of poverty. Poverty is the natural condition of the human animal.
There's no cause for poverty. Really?
Yeah, doesn't that just make you want to rip your clothes off and run rabbits?
Well, I'm glad that some Yahoo from Lubbock, Texas is smarter than the old German economist from Trier, or the British economist from London, or pretty much anyone who's ever studied this sort of thing.
Yeah, maybe Thorsten Verblen, maybe. I mean, yeah.
There's another one. But it's one of these comforting little lies that they tell themselves, because then they feel better.
Yeah, well, we don't have to do about anything but poverty. Poverty is the natural state of the human animal.
Right.
It's only when humankind is uplifted by capitalism and the free market that we achieve our true human potential.
Maybe this ties into the McCutcheon thing, because I mean, if poverty really is the natural state, so naturally some people are born poor, and there's echoes of Herbert Spencer in this. We've talked about Spencer before.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, it's natural. So, you know, it's right that they shouldn't really have a voice in politics, because, you know, what are they going to do with their voice in politics? They're just going to throw it away.
Well, I'm going to give you one more that'll send cold chills down your spine, John.
Yeah.
The best public policy treatment we have for poverty is dilution.
What? Is what?
Dilution.
What is?
D-I-L-U-T-I-O-N. Dilution.
Oh, dilution. Wait.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you can almost smell the smoke coming off the ovens, can't you?
A bunch of Okay, so we need to thin the population, or a bunch of really wealthy people need to go down there and impregnate some poor Kentuckian girls. Is that the?
Well, we've tried that. We've tried the latter, John. It really doesn't work that well. Dilution.
So I see Lubbock genius. All that stuff that we don't like about eugenics is just bad PR, basically.
When I was talking with the Angry Indian a little bit ago, it wasn't long before Edward Bernays came out.
I love Angry. He's great. And when you said savages, I thought, well, we need to get him on here, and I think he would have some perspective on that thought.
Yeah, in fact, he just chatted to me on Skype. Spencer and Malthus.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Especially in regards to dilution.
Dilution. That's the...
Because, you know, I know, because I haven't seen the signs, because sometimes, every now and then, even a well-meaning liberal, John, will say to me, well, why don't y'all get out of there?
All right.
And I'm thinking, A, you have never seen a forced migration. They're not pretty.
Huh, right.
Maybe Pakistan and India in 1948 come to mind?
That would be one. Cambodia, forced bombing of rural areas, sure, yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Lots of great folks have been on this side, yeah.
And so I'm waiting to figure out, you know, is it Vail, Beverly Hills maybe? How about Mill Valley, California? Are they the ones with the signs up that say, give us your tired, your huddled masses of hillbillies, we're just sitting here waiting?
Well, you know, he saw the Beverly Hillbillies and he thought it was a documentary. just pile the Klan onto the old rattletrap car and just, you know, ride on down the road and you'll.
And you know what? There's a paper for the Modern Language Association, the false paradigm of the Beverly Hillbillies. You'll notice that they were tolerated because they were rich, but the problem is that Jed got rich because somebody found because the OK Oil Company or whatever found oil down in his bottomland. Now, the funny thing is, when that really did happen with various and sundry resources in this country, the fella from OK Oil didn't come up to the old hillbilly shack and say, let me write you a check for $60 million, you know, and you move to Beverly.
Uh-huh.
They brought the broad form deed in, did the old man out of his property and his wealth, and later on told him he could go to work in the patch.
It's the same story that's going on now. It's the same damn story. Yeah, you can go to work in the patch. You can do that. You know, don't ask for any time off though, because again, you know, there's 14 million hillbillies just like you that would love a job out there.
And the thing that Angry pointed out is that white folks are certain segments of white folks are maybe fast realizing that they're not part of the privilege structure anymore. That maybe it shifted a little bit to money privilege over race privilege, because race privilege is no longer quite as effective as it used to be.
Yeah.
But so we tend to think about West Virginia, Kentucky, things like that. But I got a story here out of Pennsylvania, lo and behold, where our old friends at Cabot Oil and Gas.
Yeah, we're buddies.
Have managed to get an injunction against a woman named Vera Scroggins, who is an anti-fracking activist in Dimmick, that effectively bans her from setting foot or coming within X number of feet of 40% of the entire county.
Really?
The injunction prohibits her from going not only on the land Cabot owns, but also on the land where Cabot leases the subsurface mineral rights, and that is 40% of the county where Dimmock is.
Yeah.
And this story goes back to 2013, and it was updated on April 2nd of this year.
This is the neoliberal problem. Is that we have this very outmoded idea that we have certain rights and privileges and obligations that are given to us by this founding document that are our country is based on. But when that contradicts or countervenes corporate rights and responsibilities, we lose.
Oh yeah, there's I mean, and there's yeah. there's not even any time spent on not much in the way of deliberation. It is as read that we lose.
Yeah, it's very obvious, and we need to first get really cognizant of that idea. And again, this is why I think Dr. Bill is so important. We need to get really cognizant of this shift that's going on, pay a lot more attention to it, and somehow stop this roller coaster, because it's not leading anywhere good for civil society, which, I mean, I know we're told doesn't exist, but tell that to the people who go over to their neighbors and get child care because they don't have time off from their job at Walmart. You know, tell them that there's no such thing as society because they depend on it to live. This happens where you are, I know.
Oh, without a doubt.
You know, tell it to folks who have to work in an underground economy.
Oh, you're so going to love the rest of that article because one of its central tenets is the underground economy that is created by women who are getting $500 a month in EBT benefits, SNAP benefits, and turning around and using it to buy Pepsi at the local Walmart and then reselling the Pepsi into the black market at 50 cents on the dollar, at which point they get $250 for their $500 worth of Pepsi.
You know what? My answer to that would be, if you don't like that, then fix the system, because it's clearly not serving the people. Nobody wakes up in the morning thinking, man, I am sure glad I can game the system today. That's not human nature. That is not human nature. You know, you want to stop that shit, then you got to, like, you know, fix the EBT system, fix the SNAP system, stop cutting benefits, get people some damn jobs.
Or maybe acknowledge that the woman who would sell $500 worth of Pepsi, which is just inconceivable in the first place, I think the guy's probably just a liar.
Taking a dread, sure.
But to get $250 worth of cash, as I noted earlier, the assumption that he wants you to make is that she's buying pills or weed or booze or something like that. But the more likely story is that she's got to have her car fixed, or she's got a power bill she can't pay, or they've cut the water off.
Yeah.
You know, in a place that used to have pure, clean, cold, crystal clear, magnificent water, but, well, that horse left the barn.
It wasn't privatized, Bob. I mean, that's unacceptable. Again, in this neoliberal wonderland that we live.
I mean, there's so much of this crap here. The government gives people checks, but nobody teaches them how to live. You have people on the draw getting $3,000 a month, and they still can't live. When I was at the school, we'd see kids come in from a long weekend just starve to death, but you'll see those parents at the grocery store with their 15 cases of Pepsi, and that's all they got in the buggy. You know what they're doing. Everybody knows. Nobody does anything. Please.
No, it's nonsense on the face of it.
So we've gone from $500 worth of Pepsi to $3,000. How many buggies would it take to... for $3,000 worth of Pepsi?
It's also just emblematic of this idea that nobody can realize that a problem is social. So maybe one time one guy saw a dude buy some crab legs with EBT benefits, whatever. So it happened to one guy. Then it becomes like, this is how these people work. It's not, there's no extrapolation from that to, like, you know, what does the system really consist of?
Well, did you see the story that broke in the last couple of weeks about the couple that were arrested or indicted in Florida because they had purchased a yacht and they were drawing food stamps and benefits in Minnesota?
No, I didn't see that.
I did.
But it just makes
me cringe. Because it gives everybody in the country, all these Kevin Williamsons of the world. See, all those poor people have yachts.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest beneficiary of SNAP benefits is people who have full-time jobs, well, I mean, quote-unquote full-time jobs at Walmart.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a fact.
Probably followed in fairly short order by members of the United States military.
you know what? Probably so, actually. Yeah, because, I mean, you know, you can only be savaged by predatory payday lenders for so long before you got to, you know, make some ends meet. Yeah, it's absolutely, it's repulsive how we turn preying on the most vulnerable people in our society into a virtue. And we turn the idea of community into some kind of nasty word that nobody believes in. It's repulsive. It's terrifying.
And I didn't mean to hijack your original topic away from your point, John, but I think it's part of a larger, the reason I mentioned all this to you is because I think it's part of a larger whole. A country that boldly and loudly complains about how much it loves its unborn, and then brutalizes the parents to be. What's left to be said about that country? Except that it's a land of hypocrites, and that it is dooming itself. Gay marriage is not going to doom this country, but that kind of conduct will.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, you're right, and you didn't hijack. You're right. They are of a piece, and I'm glad you widened it, because it's important to see these connections. That itself is a radical act, as far as I can tell. So thanks. So good job. Yeah.
Well, John, I really appreciate the conversation because, like I said, sometimes I read things and I go, you know, need to hear from Dr. John on this. So when you go and you actually put your eyeballs on this, and you will want the big industrial-sized gallon jug of eye bleach for after you're done. Read, as I said to Angry, read the article, then go read the comments, because they just get funner and funner.
I bet. Well, I will do that. Thanks a lot, Bob. I'll talk to you later, okay?
Okay, thank you, John. Have a good evening.
All right, cheers.
Bye now. Our buddy Dr. John. I knew. I mean, did you hear his voice? I knew when I read him that line about poverty is the natural condition of the human animal. I knew he would go a little bit wild. Let's keep things going. Oh, by the way, we do have our ongoing fundraising going on. Thank you to Jeff, and thank you to Glenn, who have pushed that number out there, further than it was. We are at $75, which is half of what we try to raise in any given evening. And remember, for the remainder of the week, we're trying to raise next week's funds as well. I know it's hard. I apologize. But it seems somewhat unavoidable in this circumstance. So we're at $75. Ordinarily, that would be half of what we need. And hopefully we'll at least make it to the evening's fundraising goal and see what develops tomorrow. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
You talking to me?
Hey, Bill, what's happening?
Oh, man, I feel after following those two guys, I feel like you're following too far under the hitters. You know, just that guy out and get it over with, you know?
All you got to do is keep the ball in play.
Well, I'll try. You hit a couple things tonight. This constant fascination by the right wingers. Everybody's a Nazi to them. They love to call people Nazis. And also the collectors of stuff that we were talking about. I don't know whether you or Jim was talking about these guys who are going out digging up corpses to get.
Well, that was Dr. John who originally brought that to the table.
Oh, Dr. John, thank him. He's on the money with that one, because I had a coal scuttle helmet that somebody gave me, but they told me that was a World War I helmet.
It was the same design from one to the next.
Yes, exactly. And so I had it for a while, and of course lost it. Another thing that I was really surprised to find in Toronto on the waterfront. You ever been down there?
No, I've never been to Toronto.
Well, they have a lot of antique stores, and here I picked up a medal, and it was for service in Indochina. It was in French, and it was somebody got it for serving in the Indochina War, which I like to use the terms, because that way, you know, the difference is that Indochina War was a different whole sort of different thing. And the Vietnam War was the one where you still sit and ask, what the hell were we doing there? whose idea was that? And I keep hearkening back to the Dulles brothers who wanted us into that damn thing. And
bless his heart, Harry Truman, who said no thank you. But that only lasted until Harry decided not to run in 52.
It was Ike who also who went to Matt Ridgway, who had commanded, you know, the airborne guys in World War II, and he'd taken over command of the 8th Army after Walton Walker was following Patton. He got himself killed in a car wreck. He had been a armored commander.
Yeah, but it was Ike who was basically carrying water for his old pal Charles de Gaulle.
Yep. But he didn't know, and Ridgway told him, basically the answer that he gave Ike was, what's in this for us? What the hell? Show me what we have to gain. Are we stopping communism? Are we...
That's when they had to go back to the drawing board and invent the domino theory.
Yep.
But all kidding aside, you know, you've heard all this Appalachia stuff this evening, Bill. And I know you've referred in previous programs and conversation to the fact that, you know, you ran across some of those folks who were part of the hillbilly diaspora up in northern Ohio.
A lot of guys, well, there was an old joke about don't try to cross Interstate 75. Don't try to walk across that on a Friday night. Because the traffic was streaming south because the men were not real happy about having to leave their homes and families. And you were hit it on the head when this dispersion of Americans and the breakup of family units has been a bad, I know people who are cousins and such who don't even talk to each other. I got a call this year from the daughter of one of my cousins who was, the guy was much older than me. Him and his brother went through Germany in the soft times, you know, when the Germans were putting up the big fight on the Eastern Front, trying to, I don't know what the hell they thought they were going to do. Well, there's one talk show host here in Cleveland whose father told him the Russian army was worthless. I thought to myself, well, you're nuts. Or these people who would like to talk us into a war in the Ukraine, have they forgotten about nuclear missiles, or is it just me that's... Maybe I'm being paranoid for fear of the fact that we get involved with the Soviets, and all of a sudden, where'd that light come from? I'm like, it's really, really daylight out there, isn't it? You know, the whole 9 yards. It's a strange.
Well, it's the fact that they're wrapping it in with their homophobia that makes it particularly interesting because, Pat Buchanan was a rabid old anti-commie. But now, all of a sudden, he's bosom buddies with Vladimir Putin because Putin's got his neck on the got his boot on the necks of the gay population in Russia.
Yeah.
Sweet Jesus.
Well, I wish I could get turn loose on. We have a ton of Russians here in the building, but most of them are Russian Jewish people who emigrated here in the 70s when. We have a family member who's from Texas who could. Give me more background than I have, you know. But I just happen to have seen and lived in a neighborhood where a lot of folks came to, and I had a call from a friend of mine not too long ago, a female, who she married a guy who converted to Judaism, and he was a strong, super strong Orthodox. And she was standing up for Netanyahu, and I had a hard time because... Bob, I sat at my office desk in 1967 when the five-day mess was going on and just pulling for the Israelis to win it, of course, because I didn't think much of Gamal Abdel Nasser. And I don't think I was too far off base. I didn't think that guy was, you know, much of anything. Again, where did he come from? Another military coup. When you keep having those things as a way of bringing people, I like Sadat a lot. Anwar Sadat, I had a lot of respect for. And the Yom Kippur War, that was another thing. Me and my buddy had shortwave radios, and we saw something happening when the Israelis encircled a whole ton of Egyptian soldiers. And I was talking to one, it was Sparky I was talking to about the hearing a news bulletin that the Nixon had put the Strategic Air Command on alert. Because that came through at 6 o'clock in the morning on the news, and it didn't come through again. Somebody let something slip, in other words. Evidently, things do go through the mill and come out the wrong end. They wasn't supposed to be heard by the masses. How the hell that ever slipped through, I'll never know. But he agreed that that had actually happened because he was involved on the, what was it, Guam? With the B-52s?
Yeah.
And when you start having stuff brought home to you like that, I keep telling people I sound like an old geezer, but folks, you should have been around in October of 1962. And that whole series of things. And we had a problem. There was an American ship that was in the Mediterranean. It was a bristle with radio. It was an intercept ship. And the Israelis attacked it. The USS, goddamn, I can't think of the name of it.
Oh, the Liberty?
Liberty, sure. I get stuff periodically. By the way, my email is up and running again, thanks to a fellow from south of here who was stopped by.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah, well, it's it's this old computer I'm running, as I say. It's my other one's on its way back with a new hard drive. The other old one, two of them I'm running with XP, Bob. But I tell you, from what I hear from people who, they love XP.
Oh, yeah, and there's a lot of frustration with Microsoft for abandoning it.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. I don't know if it's going to hurt me much because...
Well, the thing is, they're just not going to they're not going to update it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. If what you do with it is fairly limited, maybe it won't have such an impact on you. Bill, it's good to hear from you. Thank you.
I'll let you go. But anyway, you guys, you got started on something right away. And Dr. John, of course, is the angry Indian. I don't know how angry he is, but he's sure damn intelligent and sensible. So he's not angry the way I used to get angry. When I got angry, the bad language would fly and things would fly around the house. Anyway, you take care.
All right. Thanks, Bill. Have a good night.
All right, man.
Bye now. Mr. Stress calling from Cleveland, and let's try to get another call in for the end of the program. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, hold on. Sorry about that. I had you on speakerphone.
Oh, no worries. No worries.
Let's see. Let's go back to the pertinent issue that you've been discussing, this National Review article. Who's it by again?
Kevin D. Williamson.
I haven't had time to read it, but I was listening carefully to your quotes. First thing, when he quotes the Guttmacher Institute being about the teenager pregnancy rate, surely Guttmacher would not use the word savage.
Oh, no. That's his word.
Well, and I think you might be right in your interpretation of his subjectivity used in that. Second thing, the quote about poverty being the natural state of the human animal.
Yeah.
Well, that could be loosely, I think, act more acutely. Coming from a capitalist or a large capitalist perspective, poverty would mean scarce. It could be interpreted. I'm not saying this is hard or hard and fast. Would be scarcity. Because many of them believe that manufacturing, production, consumerism, is the remedy for poverty. Another thing I'd like to throw at you is that we should always bear in mind that the National Review is considered the rag of the intelligentsia of the ruling class.
Yeah, at least the right wing variety of it.
Right. I'm not sure about the left, if there is any. But
the National Review is bad enough. But what Dr. John said is true. The National Review online really is a sewer. I mean, and in fact, Benny, who alerted me to this article in the first place, went back and did some digging, and apparently this Kevin D. Williamson cat has a real history of some... I mean, just just the most nasty, virulent stripe of wingery. And while I understand your contention about it could be the poverty could be another rubric for economic scarcity, that really when you go and look at it, I don't think you're going to find yourself agreeing with yourself, and I'm not trying to be disagreeable, because there's no cure for poverty because there's no cause of poverty. Poverty is the natural condition of the human animal. In other words, it's not the resource scarcity that you see talked about in economic circles. This is this idea that unless we have out of control capitalism, we're all going to be, well, you know, freezing to death in the dark and in a bucket.
Let me take this by the horns and help you and I reach some agreement, or maybe not. You know, what kind of person, it's your personal responsibility, according to this thinking, a person who does not seek material goods is not personally responsible. Personal responsibility goes hand in glove with their interpretation of the human nature, slovenness, laziness. Human nature is basically evil. Human nature is basically lazy. Human nature does not take personal responsibility. This is most exemplified by at the editorial last Wednesday in the Wall Street Journal, written by Charles Koch. There's a huge furor out here in Kansas about it. I mean, Charles is on the defense, and that's a good thing. King Charles. But, you know, the important thing, this is the National Review, whether it's a sewer, but, you know, shit smells sweet. You know, I've had many a hog farmer and cattle farmer, rancher out here tell me that smell that smell, that's the smell of money.
Oh, yeah, that actually goes back to one of the ancient Roman emperors who imposed the first tax on public toilets.
Right. I believe that totally.
And his sons told him, and what was taken is the urine was then taken and sold to, you know, weavers or dyers or leather tanners or something, and it generated a revenue stream for the empire. And two of the emperor's sons were complaining to him about the smell, and he pulls out a sesterce or whatever it was, a Roman coin, and sniffs it and says, "Money doesn't stink."
I wonder if that would have come. Continuum.
Well, we've got a blast on out of here.
I got to throw you one last thing.
Okay.
To give you an example of the intelligentsia of the capitalist class, Republican Senator Jerry Moran from Kansas read into the congressional record on the floor of the Senate of the United States Congress last week, the following day, Thursday, after Charles Koch's editorial appeared, he read that thing and insisted on reading it word by word into the...
I saw that. My God, how embarrassing.
Now, it's not embarrassing. Liberals are embarrassed. I get self-righteous and radical. But thank you for your show.
Well, I agree with that wholeheartedly.
I appreciate listening to your show this evening, and thank you for your program.
Well, I hope we'll get back to a longer conversation next time through, okay?
Sure, no problem.
Take care now.
Thank you.
Bye now. Wow, talk about packing 3 hours with 3 hours worth of content. Holy mackerel. It is time to get out of here. No time for exit music or anything like that. Rick Smith is next. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to everybody who helped with the fundraising this evening. And, well, we'll have at it again tomorrow night. Is that okay? Titanic Tuesday on the horn. Good night, y'all.